Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Last 3 days, you heard us fundraising. We're not fundraising today. That is over, but I do want to just quickly report that it was, we would say that was a successful fundraiser. 5 out of our 6 hours, we met our match, and the last hour was an extraordinary hour. So all in all, it came out just great, and I want to say a really hearty thank you to everyone who prayed for us and supported us financially through those 6 hours of pledge drive. I got to say, I feel pretty good about that we keep it to 6 hours every 3 months, and we don't even use up those whole 6 hours. And I think all of us here have a very positive feeling that how generous people are to come through for us time and time again in that way. So thank you for that. And we won't be coming to do something like that again until August. And now we can just go back to what we love to do. And today, oh, go ahead, Jimmy Akin, our guest. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, you know, maybe we can take a page from PBS's book, at least from back when I used to see PBS.
Yeah.
Because I don't have cable anymore. But, you know, when they would do their fundraising drives, which took a whole week, they would always just play Riverdance. So maybe that's what we should do. We should play Riverdance on the radio.
Nothing goes over bigger than dance on the radio. It's that's always been a big one. No cable for you, huh? Is it just because there's no need for it anymore?
I just watch so little television. Maybe I'll watch an old episode of Star Trek or Fringe or something when I'm getting ready for bed, but that's about it.
Yeah. I've got to watch Fringe. You've told me that that's good, and I have not.
It is.
That makes me feel good that there's it's a sci-fi show, right?
Yeah.
Because I love them, and I got one that I've never watched. That's good. I got one that I can turn to. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Why aren't you Catholic? That's what we're doing today, at least for the first hour. And if you are not Catholic, we'd love it if you'd call and tell us why. 888-318-7884. There's lots of reasons not to be Catholic, all the way from I don't believe in God to well, I. What?
There's lots of reasons. None of them good.
None of them. I probably should have said that, Jimmy. I didn't mean to surrender in the first few minutes of the show. None of them good. If you've got one you'd like to share with us, why aren't you Catholic? 888-318-7884. We start with an opener question, and I got this one for you, Jimmy. How do you talk to a parent or a sibling who's just strongly opposed to one's desire to become a Catholic?
Well, the first question that I always ask when this is put to me is, do you need to? Because sometimes, I mean, feelings can be very intense in families, and people are in families often, now this isn't universally true, but they're often resistant to new spiritual insights that other family members have had. You know, and this is especially true when parents are involved, you know, because if you're, let's say you're wanting to become Catholic, you've realized that's what you need to do, but your parents are cool towards this idea. And parents especially, that's true because, you know, they're thinking, hey, I changed your diapers. Who are you to tell me about spirituality? And the same thing can also be true of siblings, you know, because there can be sibling rivalries and things like that. And it was Jesus himself who said, a prophet has no honor except among his own country and his own people and his own family. So the family is often the hardest people to evangelize. And so I kind of begin with a question of, well, do you need to talk about this with your family? And the answer is not the same in every case. Sometimes the answer is no, you actually don't need to talk about this. But sometimes the answer is yes. And so how can we distinguish between those two circumstances? Well, in the case of family members who are more distant, there's less need to get into details. Like, for example, when I was becoming Catholic, I you know, let certain family members know about it, but I didn't let everybody know. One person I didn't really talk to about it was my grandmother. My grandmother, very sweet lady, but also very stubborn and very anti-Catholic, was a member of the Church of Christ, which is a common denomination, although they don't like being called a denomination, but it's a common denomination in Texas, where my family's from. And I knew that if I tried talking to her about it, it would not go well. So I said, you know, it would be better for her and for interfamily relations, including her and my long-term relationship, if I just let her find out about this organically through the family and didn't try talking to her directly about it. I knew other people in the family would mention it to her, and she would undoubtedly have a negative reaction, but she wouldn't have that negative reaction in front of me. And so this was a way of preserving, you know, the good in our relationship rather than having a big blow up between the two of us. That way she could have her reaction and deal with, you know, her reaction in her own terms without it becoming an intense confrontation. And so so I didn't tell her, and I let her find out organically, and she did find out organically, just as I knew she would. But she and I continued to have a cordial relationship, and she never really brought it up to me. So that was an example of a situation where it wasn't necessary to talk to someone about it in my own family. But other people did need to know about it. I felt my parents did need to know. Now, at the time I was becoming Catholic, I was at a very sensitive point in my life because my wife had just been diagnosed with terminal cancer. And I was actually received into the Catholic Church in her hospital room using the emergency shortened form of the rites. And so since I was about to come into the Catholic Church, I needed to let my parents know, and I did. And they deemed it, you know, I don't know the details of their immediate reaction, but I think in part because Jimmy's wife is dying, they didn't want to make a big deal out of it.
Right.
On the other hand, my wife, who was Catholic, she definitely needed to know. And however, she also wasn't going to be opposed to the idea. So I think it really varies depending on who the person is, what your relationship with the person is, and how they'll respond. If I'm in a situation, speaking hypothetically, if I was in a situation where I needed to talk to someone as close to me as a parent or a sibling, and I knew they were strongly opposed to the idea of me becoming Catholic, I would stress a few things. The first thing I would do is I would try to make the notification short and sweet. I would not try to get into a big, huge discussion. One of the things I would do as part of the conversation is be as low key as possible. I'd say, hey, I just wanted to let you know, I've been doing some study and I've, realized there is more to the Catholic faith than I previously had realized. I've been studying this very carefully, and I just wanted to let you know that it looks like I'm going to become Catholic. I probably would let him know. I probably wouldn't say I'm definitely becoming Catholic. I'd probably let him get used to the idea so that when I do become Catholic, they'll have had some exposure. It won't be coming out of the blue. So I'd probably say it's looking like I'm very likely to become Catholic, and I just wanted to let you know. Another thing that I would do is, if they have a negative reaction, is I'd stress my love for the person. You know, I'd say this doesn't change our relationship. If needed, I would say this doesn't change our relationship. I still love you. I still care about you. I still respect you. But this is something that I feel that I need to do in conscience. And I would appeal to my conscience and say, I'm sure you can understand. You have your own convictions. You need to be true to them. And I respect that. And I'd ask that you respect my convictions that I also need to be true to. I mean, you wouldn't want me to betray my conscience, would you? And hopefully they will respond at least relatively positively to that. Now, if they want to go further into the conversation, there's another prudential choice to make. But the question you need to ask yourself is, will further conversation at this time serve the serve any useful purpose? If it will, like if it'll help reassure them, if it'll help clear away some misconceptions they have or concerns they might have, well, then it's good to go ahead and continue the discussion with them. But if you reach a point where you say, this is just turning into a big argument, it is not helping us, it's actually harming our relationship as family members, then it's time to say, you know, I don't think this is the right time to discuss this. We can discuss it in the future, and I'm happy to do that at some point, but I don't think it's good for us to continue this conversation right now. I think we need some time to get used to the idea and, you know, to let things settle a little bit. Another principle, and I'll mention two more principles, and then I know you're going to want to go to a break because Psychelet wants to go to – you like Psychelet likes to take breaks.
I do.
One principle is never expect – another person to change their mind in front of you. Never ask the person to do that. What the successful way to approach conversations is plant seeds. You if you are having a conversation, you want to give evidence, and you want to then let the person go off and think about that evidence while they're not in the interpersonal pressure that conversations like this involve. Because they're more likely to change their mind when they're away from you than when they're in front of you. People, when they're in front of you, tend to dig in their heels, and they're not as willing to have to really revisit their opinion. So never expect someone to change their mind in front of you. The other thing is there are other ways to depersonalize the situation. You don't have to take all the burden on yourself. You could say, you know, if you'd like to know more about the kind of position or the kind of evidence that's led me this far, I'll recommend a book or I'll recommend a video or something like that. And you can absorb that at your own time. If you have questions, you can come back to me and I'll explain further. But here's this great Jimmy Akin book, or here's this great Jimmy Akin podcast or video or whatever. And that way you can throw the burden on me to explain the ideas and the evidence rather than having to take that burden on yourself. And it's actually good to do that because it depersonalizes the situation. They're not face-to-face confrontations between family members are always more intense, but I'm not a family member. And I don't care if they get mad at me and hate me. You know, I'm not there talking to them face to face, and they're not my family member. So you can take yourself out of the hot seat by using other resources to communicate the information you'd otherwise have to present yourself. And so those are some of the basic principles that I'd use in such a situation.
Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you very much. And you are right. I do love taking breaks. So we'll take one right back with more. Why aren't you Catholic with Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live? If you're not Catholic, we're holding the phones for you, 888-318-7884.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool and your homeschool co-op, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit MysticMonkCoffee.com. That's MysticMonkCoffee.com.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards is our show for young adults.
Everybody's talking about encounter. Everybody's talking about that mountaintop experience. What we fail to often talk about is what happens after. What happens beyond that Damascus moment?
Jesus Christ is calling all of us to be missionary disciples, disciples of Jesus who are on mission to bring the kingdom of God here and now on this earth.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards, tomorrow at 8 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin is our guest, and we're holding the phones for those who are not Catholic. It's Why Aren't You Catholic? 888-318-7884. Jimmy just made a great point, though. A lot of the people that were calling before Easter to tell us they were not Catholic were saying, hey, I'm not Catholic because I haven't been baptized yet, but I will be. So probably we have limited our calls tremendously by right after Easter coming back and saying, call if you aren't Catholic. So I'll tell you what, anybody can call. If you've got a question for Jimmy, go ahead and call. But we'll, with this caveat, anybody who calls that's not Catholic, we'll put them up to the front. 888-318-7884. You know what? There's so many exciting, wonderful things to discover in this world, and more than 400 of them are examined at Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Each Friday, a new one drops. What dropped today, Jimmy?
This week, we have an episode about ancient Christian ghost encounters. I went through Christian literature starting in the first century up through the fifth century and mined it for ghost accounts and debates about ghosts. And so this is the start of an occasional series I'm going to do. I'm going to walk through Christian history, talking about ghost encounters in different periods and how ideas and attitudes changed. So this one covers the first five centuries of Christian history. And there are some really interesting ghost encounters that have surprises in them that you wouldn't expect. There's also some really interesting debates. Now, the overwhelming majority of Christians in every age have believed in ghost encounters. But there's one church father, just one, who was unusually skeptical, and that was St. Augustine. Now, he doesn't think that most ghost encounters, you know, even if you set aside ones that have natural causes, he doesn't think that ghost encounters are very common, but even he acknowledges they do sometimes happen. But he's got some arguments for his position. And so in addition to relating the different ghost encounters that we currently have records of from these centuries, we also look at St. Augustine's views and what's wrong with them, because he was totally in the minority on this.
Really? He was the guy, he was the odd man out, huh?
He was the odd man out. He actually said a lot of good things, but there are some crucial flaws in his reasoning. And others, including other doctors of the church, definitely did not agree with him, which is something we'll look at in the next episode I do in this series, where we'll be talking about ghost encounters reported by Pope Saint Gregory the Great.
Oh yeah,
who in has a lot of them in his dialogues. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Okay, very cool. I mean, do you think that like just the ancient mind? Let's say there is such a thing as the ancient mind. Was it pretty open to ghosts? Like, did people just kind of go, yeah, that's probably part of it. That's part of life.
Oh, yeah. And not just in Christian circles, in Jewish circles, in Babylonian circles, in Egyptian circles. Ghosts are a universal human phenomenon that goes back all the way to the beginning of human history. So there's definitely the belief in ghosts, meaning the spirits of the departed who appear to the living in some form, is a human universal. It's in every time and every culture. Mm-hmm. Augustine was just a party pooper.
If I've said it once, I've said it 100 times. Hey, the number here is 888-318-7884. You are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Neil is in New Jersey. Welcome, Neil. You got a question for Jimmy?
Absolutely. So I just have like a quick qualifying question beforehand, and then we can go into the thing. So like, You would agree that the Catholic Church cannot change its position on contraception. So, for instance, Dignitatis Humanae is not an infallible document because it cites natural law. So if it was to agree with contraception, it would contradict Catholicism.
So you went rather quickly through that. The first part of the question, which I latched onto, was the statement, you, meaning me, Jimmy Akin, would agree that the church can't change its teaching on contraception. No, I would not agree to that. There is a debate in many circles about the status of the church's, the level of authority the church's teaching on contraception has. However, this was actually a subject that was addressed at the time Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae was issued in 1968. And the individual that the Vatican appointed to explain the encyclical to the public addressed this question and said, this is an authoritative teaching, but it is not an infallible one. So that's what was said at the time. Also, Humanae Vitae does not use the language needed to trigger infallibility. And one thing a lot of people don't realize is Humanae Vitae only deals with contraception in marriage. It does not deal with contraception outside of marriage. So there are a number of unanswered questions here. I'm not going to sign off on a blanket. The church just can't change anything in this area, given the factors I've just named.
I appreciate that. That's a very nuanced position that a lot of people would not hold. And that follows into I was really trying to say, because I expected you to say yes. Mm-hmm. I expected you to say yes. So I was going to mention how the subjugation of women, which was cited from being from natural law and was unanimous among the church fathers, and Thomas Aquinas, who is sometimes quoted erroneously, and I have citations from him here, but it seems like you would agree that the church has changed its position on these things. So,
I'd need to know what specifically count as these things, but obviously there is a phenomenon known as doctrinal development, which the church acknowledges, and there have been developments on various issues. There is this known phenomenon, and it's just a question of, well, which issues are we talking about and how has it been applied? And, you know, we can always ask questions about the future. Where might it go in the future? But if you've encountered Catholics who have an overly simplistic view that portrays the church as a monolith that has no doctrinal development, well, then I'd say that's a mistaken view. You've encountered some Catholics who aren't fully properly educated on this. By the way, Neil, since you're asking about an area that involves a fair amount of nuance, and I always try to be nuanced, even when I have to answer a question briefly, but I always try to be very balanced and very nuanced, even when what I say is not going to be popular as a result. I try to be very honest and straightforward about how the evidence appears. I wrote a book on how to evaluate church teaching, including matters like doctrinal development, what's infallible, what's not infallible. It's called Teaching with Authority. And since you're in New Jersey, and that's currently part of North America, at least so I hear, why don't we send you a free copy of that book, and you can learn about this area in great depth, if that's something you're interested in. It also incorporates.
I'm honored with that.
Oh, yeah, no problem. It also,
it
incorporates a discussion of the authority level of Humanae Vitae and the contraception teaching. So I actually quote the original documents from the 1960s to explore that and how it was explained to the public at the time.
You know, I just want to say I'm so thankful for you, Jimmy, because when I have like had, you know, I guess you could say discussions or debates with Catholics, and I point out that the church very well can change its position on these things and has changed its position on many things like that under the guise of development. You know, they freak out. They think that that's impossible, that would be a contradiction of the church. And I'm like, well, that's the contradiction of the church. Then that's your problem with Catholicism. You're believing it on false premises. And I just am a realist in how these things have developed.
Yeah,
and
well,
I agree with that. I'm so touched by that. Like from the very onset, you know, I thought I had to like give kind of an argument behind it, but you just made it from the beginning.
Yeah, no problem. I try to be honest, and I hope you enjoy the book.
Hang on. Don't go anywhere because you can hear the music. That means I have to take this break. No choice on that, Neil, but we do want you to have the book. So if you just hang on, talk to Edgar, give him an address. We'll send it off to you. More for Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live right after this. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Throughout history, some Catholics have been among the worst kind of villains, right? Or were they? In Canceled, historian Steve Weidenkopf digs into the lives and controversies of some of these Catholics whose reputations have been blackened, often unfairly. He takes on the anti-Catholic versions of history and defends not only these figures, but the faith they represent. Order your copy of Canceled today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore. Groovy music for you on this Friday. Jimmy Akin, our guest. Our number, 888-318-7884. Heading off to New Mexico now. Ryan is in New Mexico. Ryan, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Jimmy, as well, for taking my call. I really do appreciate it. So peace be with
you.
No problem. This Easter season. So I have a question about the just war doctrine. I am a Catholic, but I'm also a veteran. I get caught up sometimes in the rhetoric. So how do I align myself with the faith and the church and her teaching with the just war doctrine? Because I'm a Catholic before I'm a veteran. So that's my question. Mm-hmm.
Well, I would say read the Catechism's discussion of just war and meditate on it. That's the fundamental advice I would give. The Catechism contains the most recent authoritative and balanced discussion of just war. And so that would be my starting point. I don't know the precise paragraphs off the top of my head that deal with it. I mean, I've read them, you know, multiple times. I just don't have the paragraph numbers in the catechism memorized for the most part. But it's going to be in the section on the thou shalt not kill commandment. So that would be my basic advice. Is there a more particular issue that you're looking at?
This is hard with my friends. I get caught up in certain things with our country and conflicts, and I just sometimes feel like it's justified, but I know there's probably a clearer understanding with the church, justified as opposed to non-justified. So maybe I should just read the catechism and on it. I wasn't sure where it was, but maybe that's a good starting point just so I could familiar myself with it.
Okay. Are you referred to it being justified? Are you talking about a particular war?
The current, I guess, conflict. It's not a war technically, but the current conflict that we're in. This one that was Iran.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the church has not said anything authoritative one way or another on that subject. And so there have been opinions expressed by different Catholics, including the Pope has expressed opinions about some aspects of the current conflict, but nothing authoritative has been imposed by church authority on this topic. And so as a result, there is considerable room for liberty of opinion on this, whether, you know, some people may think that the conditions for just war are fulfilled. Others may think they are not fulfilled. And that's okay. That's something that Catholics may freely debate. So if you're looking for, I was just able to look it up, and the paragraphs you're going to want to consult in the Catechism are paragraphs 2307 through 2317. So there's about 11 paragraphs there. 2307 is where you want to start.
Okay, I will do, Jimmy. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's hard. I vote, and you know, and I know I'm not the one that's the president or anyone else, but it's hard. I just want to balance my faith with my other views. So I will look at it and I'll study it. Thank you. It really helps me. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you for the call. Off we go now to Adam in Chesapeake, Virginia, watching on Facebook. Adam, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Yeah, so I'm going to be a convert. I'm going to be joining the church in May. And
Oh, awesome. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a long journey. I was a Mormon for 21 years and then an Episcopalian, and now I'm going to be joining the church. But
wow, wonderful.
My question is, my wife has like no interest at all, and sometimes, you know, I've been going to Mass and there's other families there, husbands and wives, and they're happy, and I'm there all by myself, and sometimes it does make me like a little sad. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask you guys for some tips on how I can maybe gently nudge her to soften her heart a little bit, so that maybe one day she will decide to either join OCIA or at least just start coming to Mass with me.
Okay. Well, I'll do what I can to help, but I'm very limited here because you know your wife and I don't. So I can only give some very basic generic advice. I also, you know, have sympathy with your situation. I know what it's like to see, you know, families at church and so forth, and to be there alone, because that's my situation. I'm there alone every time I go to Mass. And, you know, if this helps in any way, at least you've got a wife, and I hope, and you know, that you have a loving marriage and a happy marriage outside of this context. But I'm a widower, you know, and so there are people who would love to be married and would love to have a spouse who are in a situation that's even less advantaged than the one you find yourself in. And so if that perspective, you know, can be of assistance in any way, you know, at least you get to go home from Mass and have your wife there. So that I would view as a positive thing. That's a good thing about your situation. I understand, though, you know, the difficulty that also accompanies having a spouse that one is not part of the same church as. In terms of basic advice that I would give, well, I there are sort of two goals, potentially. One is just getting her to go to Mass with you. And the other would be maybe she'd be interested in converting someday. Now, you say she has no interest in these things. And given that, and given that you're in the process of becoming Catholic right now, my first piece of advice would probably be let this rest for a while, because I assume you've had this conversation at least fairly recently. And the fact that you're going to become Catholic next month means that the emotions around this issue are going to flare up a bit. And so I would wait a while before I took any active steps towards, you know, helping your wife move in the directions that you mentioned. I'd let her get used to having a Catholic husband for a while. And then I would, after, I don't know, 6 months, a year, something like that, maybe put out feelers and see if she'd be interested. Like, hey, honey, there's a picnic at the church. Would you like to go? You know, and having some kind of involvement. At some point, it could be appropriate to say, you know, now that I'm Catholic, I know you're not interested in becoming Catholic, but there's this inquirer's class going on at the parish, and it could explain, you know, some of how Catholics view things. It could help you understand me better. I love you. Nothing is going to change that. But it might help if you, you know, wanted to go to this class. Or, you know, even though we aren't in the same church, you know, I think it would be good if we went to church together. So now, is your wife currently part of a church, Adam?
So she was Episcopalian for a long time, which is why I got baptized as one. Mm-hmm. She wanted to be married by an Episcopal priest, so I went mm-hmm. ahead and got baptized basically for her at the time. But mm-hmm. her main beef with the Catholic Church is that she's like, it doesn't make sense that a woman can't be a priest. So that's her main objection to it. And I don't know how to really mm-hmm. answer that correctly, because I'm still learning myself. But that's the main beef, is that there's no female priests.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have, if you go to Catholic.com, and I know we're coming up on a break here, Cy Kellett, because I'm telepathic and I can read your mind. Mm-hmm. But Adam, we've dealt with this issue rather a lot. We've had resources. Some of them are at Catholic.com for free. Also our YouTube page. If you just search for women priests, we have an AI search feature that can also compose answers for you on this and recommend further resources, then that's something that I would recommend. I mean, the fundamental reason that women aren't priests in the Catholic Church is because Christ, who was not beholden to social conventions, made a choice, and he didn't appoint any female apostles. So we have good evidence that the will of Christ is for the Christian clergy to be drawn from men, and most men aren't even priests, so it's only a tiny minority. But this is an issue we've devoted a considerable amount of attention to, and I would start by doing searches and AI searches on Catholic.com and seeing what resources come up, and that can provide you with some additional background. Also, on the principle that on the principle that I mentioned earlier about depersonalizing conversations, you could also use some of those resources and say, hey, honey, I looked this up and here's this link that even if you don't agree, it'll at least explain where Catholics are coming from on this issue. And then at some point in the future, you could invite her to attend church with you. Part of the price for that, maybe you also need to attend church with her. But then you wouldn't be going to church alone, and neither would she.
Okay. Perfect.
Great.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to also thank Jimmy and Joe and Trent, because their books and podcasts played a major role in my in my journey. So I just wanted to thank them and thank you all for the stuff that you guys put out.
Thank you so much, and we'll encourage the listeners to pray for you as you come into the church.
Adam, what a beautiful call.
And
thank you.
Welcome home. Welcome home, buddy.
We'll take a very quick break. Jimmy's right. He could read my mind. He knew it was coming. And we'll be back. More questions for Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Support for Catholic Answers Live comes from the Graduate School of Theology at Christendom College. Deepen your understanding of the Catholic faith through live online graduate courses taught with uncompromising fidelity to the Church's magisterium, from Christology and bioethics to Mariology and more. This summer, you can also attend the Institute for Liturgical Formation on campus. Begin your master's degree or earn a certificate at graduatetheology.com. That's graduatetheology.com.
He was a Jesuit, a cardinal, and a doctor of the Church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Robert Bellarmine is honored for his immense contributions to theology, including helping to draft two important catechisms that defended Church teachings during the Protestant Revolt. Pope Clement VIII named Bellarmine a cardinal because, as the Pope put it, Bellarmine had not his equal for learning.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Jimmy Akin is our guest. Three lines are open right now. That's rare when Jimmy's here, so you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Non-Catholics are going to the top of the line today, but anybody can call with whatever question. 888-318-7884. From time to time, we get the great pleasure of taking a call from the hub of the universe. Jamie in Boston calls. Nice to talk with you again, Jamie.
Wait a minute, Cy Kellett. Are you saying Jamie is the hub of the universe or Boston is?
No, Boston is. No.
I know you're from Boston, but
Jamie might actually be the actual hub, but Boston.
Okay.
Hi, Jamie.
Hi, everybody. So good to talk to you guys again. I am calling on behalf of a Protestant friend of mine. So I have a friend who let me actually pull up what she sent me. So she basically has been struggling for a couple years with kind of seeing influencers online and coming across Catholic influencers who say pretty strong stuff, that she can't be saved without being in the Catholic Church, that she doesn't worship God, that she's not really a Christian. And she just asked me for my help, basically. And because I actually converted from... Hello? Sorry?
Yeah, we got you. We got you. Go ahead, Jamie.
Keep talking.
I converted from Christianity to, non-denom to Catholicism. And so she specifically was like, I know that you converted. And so that almost makes me more scared that you agree with that and that you... Yeah, basically, she just wanted to ask my perspective on that. So I'm asking for your advice on how to reply, because I, of course, really want my friend to become Catholic so that she knows the love of Jesus in the Eucharist and knows the beauty of the church, but I also don't want her to be stressed, or maybe she should be. I'm wondering what you're thinking.
Okay. Well, you can answer this. You can give her a reply in different registers. Sort of the more blunt register would be, well, don't listen to idiots. You know, because
let's start there.
Because anyone who is representing the Catholic Church as teaching that no non-Catholics can be saved is an idiot. Either that's the charitable reading. They're either an idiot or they're knowingly misrepresenting what the church teaches. So if she's running into people who are saying that, well, don't listen to them. Now, what does the church teach on this matter? Well, this was dealt with, and this is repeated in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which quotes from the Second Vatican document, Lumen Gentium, which has a pretty balanced discussion of this question. It says that Lumen Gentium, which came out in the 1960s, acknowledges that, you know, God wants people to join his son's church, and that is functionally the Catholic Church. And if you know that that's what God wants and you refuse to do it, well, then you do jeopardize your salvation. But that fact does not mean that all non-Catholics are damned, because you notice the statement I just made has an if in it. If you know that God wants everybody to join his son's church, which is the Catholic Church, and so forth, and you don't do it, well, then you can be in trouble. But that has an if in it. And most non-Catholics do not know for a fact that that's what God wants. They may believe they've always been taught that God wants something else. And so if someone does not know, this is the other thing that the church teaches, if someone does not know that this is what God wants, well, then they're not putting a barrier in the way of his grace, and God can still save them, even though they're not Catholic and maybe not even Christian. As long as they're trying to do, you know, God's will as they understand it, they're trying to cooperate with his grace, it's possible for them to be saved. So so there's a balance of truths here. On the one hand, yes, God does want people to become Catholic, and if they knowingly refuse to do that, well, then they do jeopardize their salvation. On the other hand, not everybody who is non-Catholic is knowingly refusing God's will on this matter. So that's the essential balance here. This is something that we have, you know, resources at Catholic.com that discuss this in further detail. You know, it's a topic that comes up periodically on the show, as I'm sure Cy Kellett from Boston can attest. but that's the basic thing I would say to your friend. If you're encountering people who are saying it's impossible for a non-Catholic to be saved, that's just misrepresenting what the Catholic Church teaches. In fact, the Catechism says that there are many people who live, you know, a life of prayer that's pleasing to God in different religions. On the other hand, if one knowingly refused to go along with God's will for what he wants, well, then that would jeopardize your salvation. Just like if you rejected God's will on any other important point, like, yeah, I know God says adultery is bad, but yeah, I'm just going to go ahead and commit adultery. I mean, what's God going to do? Send me to hell? You know, So if you knowingly reject God's will on a serious matter, well, then that will jeopardize your salvation, whether it's adultery or joining his son's church or any other serious matter. But just because you don't do what he wants doesn't mean you're knowingly refusing to do that. And as long as you're trying to cooperate with God's will and accept his grace, then it is possible for you to be saved. So I would say to your friend, you know, I think it'd be a good idea if you learned about the Catholic Church, and there is more grace and truth in the Catholic Church. In you could say this from your own point of view, Jamie, I assume that there's more grace and truth available in the Catholic Church than in non-Catholic communities. But don't listen to people who are telling you that there's no hope of salvation if you're not a card-carrying Catholic. That's just not what the Catholic Church teaches.
Okay, Jamie.
Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. It's always nice to talk with you. I'll look forward to speaking with you again, all right?
Talk to you. Yes, thanks. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Luke in Georgia. Luke, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, Jimmy. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Thanks for taking it up. I have a question on behalf of one of my friends who fell away from the faith and is now flirting with sedevacantism, unfortunately. And he's on a big kick right now where a lot of it is, oh, I need to see in tradition. And I've been speaking to him for about a year now, and I've been gradually chipping away at that and convincing him to come back home.
Good.
But the only big holdup for him right now that he's struggling with is female altar servers, because he keeps telling me, like, he can't find that pre-Vatican II, and that's an innovation that strays away from a church. And I was wondering if you had any advice, what I could say to him, or resources, because he does bring up some quotes from, like, old popes and, like, you know, the Middle Ages that seem, like, a bit shaky on, like, my side. And I was just wondering what I could say to him. Thank you.
Okay, so I guess I'd say a few things. One of them is, I've very frequently find that people who consider themselves traditionalists actually don't know the tradition as well as they think they do. What they tend to do is they're aware of one strand of tradition and assume it's all of tradition. And I think this is an example of that, because if you have a problem with female altar servers on the grounds that it varies from an earlier tradition, which it does, then you should have a problem with altar servers, period. Because, Cy Kellett, you may or may not know this, but when, not what century, but why did the church introduce altar servers to begin with?
To aid and assist in the priest for Mass?
But
persecution, I'm assuming?
Well, not during the persecution. The what they're doing is they're substituting for acolytes. And so the original office that was held by adults and not by boys or girls was acolyte. And then it became inconvenient to get enough acolytes to where and when Mass needed to be said. And so the church created altar boys. And so the institution of altar boys is itself a departure from earlier tradition. So that shows that this tradition is mutable. Originally, there were no altar servers. There were acolytes. And if you can accept the transition from acolytes to altar servers, then you should be able to accept the transition from altar boys to also having altar girls, because there is no dogmatic teaching on this. In fact, the offices of both acolyte and altar server are not part of apostolic tradition. They don't come to us from the apostles. They were instituted by the church later on, and the church has never infallibly defined that they need to exist at all, much less that they need to be held by a certain age and gender of people. So so I would say having a greater appreciation of the scope of tradition would help your friend appreciate that he's confusing a recent variation with something that's of apostolic institution, when the idea of altar servers to begin with is not of apostolic institution and therefore can be varied by church authority. I'd like to say more on that, but I'm afraid I hear the music, and so we'll have to go. But I hope that's of assistance.
Luke, thank you for the
call. Thank you so much for your time, Jimmy. Really appreciate it.
Well, no problem. You too.
Luke, give us a minute more of your time. Hang on, and Edgar will send you a copy of Jimmy's book, A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist. As questions come up with your friend, maybe you will find answers to those questions in that book, A Daily Defense. Jimmy Akin is our guest. It's a mysterious world, and he's got a podcast about it. He's also got the Jimmy Akin podcast. I'll ask him what's on that when we come back. And you can ask him whatever you want. 888-318-7884.